I can't believe
Mikey.
I'm on the line with Ray Hudson. This is so exciting. This is huge for the pod.
Listen, let me jump in here. Let me interrupt you in a very rude way, because you guys at Managing Madrid give me the framework of a game every week, week in, week out, on what the bare bones of the game is coming about. And I want to thank you and all the lads at Managing Madrid for what you do, your dedication, your professionalism, your insight, your knowledge, all of those things, and least of all, your passion.
This is the Managing Madrid podcast.
Munir in for Zaza, settles, turns, shoots and buries it! Diego Alves with the risky pass in the back. They find Munir, and Zaza finds the net. What a way to start out for Los Che.
And you said it, Phil. You said these players such as Zaza, they've come in. There's a, what do you call that, reclamation project? Well, what a way to reclaim some pride for Valencia. That is a fabulous strike. That's one of the goals of the season, surely.
Real Madrid scrambling back. Zaza threads it across. Here's Nani one-on-one with Carvajal. Back the other way, stepping up on Oriana. Rolls it through Navas, and it's two. We're barely 8 minutes in, and Valencia shredding the Real Madrid defense.
Brilliant counterattack, absolutely stunning. They got numbers forward, Valencia. They were able to find the gaps there. Ramos and company got a big job here. 2-0 down. Valencia in the ascendancy, mighty delighted with that. And you said it fully, so there's a lot of talent up front. Can they gel? The answer after 8 minutes, yes, they can.
So dangerous on the set plays. Run of play, maybe not as much here. Another chance. Snap to the corner! Cristiano Ronaldo soars and scores. And just before the half, Real Madrid cuts the lead in half. 43 straight games with a goal.
Yeah, we said they would score, they have to score, but CR7 getting up, absolutely brilliant. Good ball into him, back in this match, Real Madrid. Have a look, Marcelo head up, looks for his man, always looking for Ronaldo, because he knows one thing, Ronaldo can climb, he can get up, he can hang in the air, and he can finish. Absolutely brilliant. And what a good time to score. 1 minute before halftime, you go in that locker room, and suddenly it's a whole different atmosphere amongst the players.
Hello and welcome to the Managing Madrid podcast. This is your host, Kian Subani. Today we are going to break down Real Madrid's loss at the Mestalla, a 2-1 defeat against Valencia, which sees their cushion at the top of the table somewhat dissipated, but it's still there. Real Madrid still leads the league with a game in hand. To help me break this down is our very own Om Arvin. Om, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to be here, not happy about our performance.
So there's a lot to discuss here. I think the most obvious starting point is the beginning, which kind of dictated Real Madrid's result, because they grew into this match after the first quarter of an hour or so, but the hole that they dug themselves in initially was just way too much to recover from. And I wouldn't, like, there was some people on Twitter who kind of labeled it as, like, lethargic. I'm not sure if I would label it as lethargic. I would label it as chaotic. I don't think it's that Real Madrid necessarily didn't try, but there was a breakdown in their press, a breakdown in their transition D, some freak individual brilliance from Zaza, and then Oriana just striking one right down the, you know, right between Kaylor's legs for the second after Real Madrid opened up. Let's start from the top, though. This is a scenario where Real Madrid are going in with a very strong lineup. The only notable, you know, maybe absentee is Bale, who understandably is not going to start this game. The lineup looked good. So what went wrong to begin with, Om?
I don't know why we started the way we did, but essentially the reason we lost was within that first 15 minutes or first 30 minutes. I don't know if it was a lack of focus, whether we were, you know, really overconfident because of how Valencia has been, you know, how bad Valencia has been this season. But that, like you said, the beginning of the match set the tone. There were issues individually that cost us for sure. You know, Varane made a horrible mistake on the second goal, as well as Navas, whose keeping was abominable on that second goal. But there were pressing issues that we had, you know, periodically throughout the first half that I think contributed to this. It just wasn't organized, because I praised the pressing, you know, in the last match, and it just seems to be something that isn't as consistent as we'd like it, right? This was kind of the same sort of pressing on the wings, but this time, you know, the fullbacks were not in sync with the forward pressers, so they wouldn't mark wide options as the forward pressers went up, or sometimes the central midfielders wouldn't provide vertical compactness, and there just always seemed to be ways for Valencia to just pick through our really weak press and, you know, hit us on the counter, where we had a high back line and where our defenders were individually inferior on the day. That's a recipe for disaster. So I think Zidane deserves some criticism, you know, with it, you know, for developing a poor press today, or maybe that's just on the players for not focusing enough today. But that coupled with, you know, our qualitative inferiority on the day, you know, that just killed us. And it was really hard to come back from that, because Valencia just parked the bus, and the best we had was just chances from range. And by at the end of the day, our expected goals was, I think it was like, yeah, it was 1.01. So we didn't create a whole lot of quality chances after that. And I think most of that is down to just Valencia just sitting so deep.
So, okay. First of all, before I, you know, get into the two goals conceded, I just want to bring up your point about the expected goals. What did you say was 1.01?
Yeah.
Here's what the thing I struggle with expected goals still is that I to me it seemed like it would be lower, but also I was surprised that like the expected goals against Napoli was so low. It was like 1.83 or something. And I just still think there's like room for subjectivity in that statistic. It still needs some work.
Right. Sorry. Go on.
No. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think what that speaks to is that it mainly says is that we weren't really able to penetrate Valencia's box. Because if you look at the map, there's a lot of shots from outside the box, but Ronaldo was taking a lot of those shots, and a lot of them were clear looks, either created by his dribbling or through some good possession play, which I guess we'll touch on sometime, you know, after we're finished discussing this point. So I think we did create better chances than the expected goals says, but I also think that it does tell us that overall we weren't able to really find high quality chances in the box. But definitely I think we're a little better than what the expected goals map tells us.
So I went back and watched the two goals conceded a couple of times because I knew it was going to be a huge talking point for this podcast. And then right before this podcast, you published a video to break down those two goals conceded, which people can go see on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle these days? I can't keep track. Was it like at Usman Dembele 5 or something?
No, it's still at OMV Arvin. It's just that my name is Usman Dembele Fanboy.
Okay. In case you can't find OM for whatever reason, because we don't know which player he's supporting on any given day, just go on the Managing Madrid account. We retweeted it there. It's there. So what I noticed, you know, from those clips, OM, is that on the first one, and you outlined this too, the breakdown in the press, which I'm not sure if you mentioned this specifically, but, you know, you spoke about the breakdown in the press on the first goal. We'll start there. We'll start with the first goal. When Ronaldo is pressing the goalkeeper and then Cruz comes, it basically breaks down there because Marcelo can't press because he's guarding the winger. I mean, technically, you probably could, but there's just lack of cohesion for the central defender to step over and coming from Marcelo while he presses up. And then that's what, you know, where the wingers were open for Valencia, and then the goal. And I thought, at least, you know, as some kind of consolation, the recovery and the transition defense on that first goal was okay.
Yeah.
But then Zaza, I'm not sure there's anything you can do about that Zaza goal, apart from what they did. It was a freak moment of brilliance. And then on the second goal, the press was a bit better.
Yeah.
But then there was a freak giveaway from Varane. And then the problem with it was that any player who can possibly cover for Varane in that position is already ahead of him. So Kroos and Casemiro are ahead. Marcelo is way up the field. And the entire left flank is completely open. And then you noted this. I didn't actually notice this until I saw it in your video, that Kroos was jogging back.
Yeah, he was like 7-8 yards in front of Varane, and he had a chance to like make it tough for the player who had received the ball in the box, but he just jogged, and it was like a 2-1 or a 2-0 on the right, and he just got a free one-on-one on goal, and that's kind of inexcusable. I defend Kroos a lot and say that defensively he's improved a lot, but there's things like this where he just doesn't seem to have that defensive instinct, which just always kind of makes me just kind of bite back on my words a little bit. But, you know, thankfully this isn't, you know, a common thing we see from Kroos. But, yeah, that was kind of inexcusable.
Casemiro was also jogging back. I don't know if you noticed. I feel like one of them could have at least put pressure, although, to be fair, neither of them were actually going to catch up to Orellana in that situation. Because we know what Kroos at full speed is actually. I'm not sure how fast he actually is, but he wasn't going to catch up to Orellana there. But still, I think in principle, you don't simply just, you know, spectate because you think you might not get there, because the play might recycle, it might come back, and you need to be there to stop it. So yeah, anything else you want to mention on those specific goals? There was one comment on Twitter saying, was Kaylor out of position on the Zaza shot, which I found hard to agree with. But
no, Navas, there's just nothing you can do. I think Varane, for all his quality, I think maybe if he's really on top of everything, could make things tougher on the turn. But it's just always so hard because usually you kind of want to let a striker back off in the box and you don't want to trip him up. That's just an unbelievable strike. I mean, focusing on like the keeper or the defender at that moment kind of misses the point, because what led to that moment and the real mistakes were made like, 10-15 seconds before that.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, you know, the dominoes were kind of already set in place. So after those two goals conceded, Real Madrid, in a sense, steadied the ship. They settled in. I thought overall, Valencia deserved to win. I don't want to be that guy who kind of just throws cold water on Valencia's victory, because I think they did deserve to win overall. But I also think that Real Madrid was the better team for very, very large stretches of this game. What do they do to at least play themselves back in the game and make a game out of it?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it was just the fact that our offense from the start was clicking. I think anyone who blames the offense has just completely missed the plot in this game, because literally the first 10 seconds of the match, were off the blocks, and all of the attackers look hungry, and they just connected really well. I thought Kroos and Modric had an underrated performance on the offensive end, because I saw them moving into the half spaces and chipping little vertical passes into those areas to find Ronaldo, Benzema, and James on a consistent basis. So Casemiro, who again was kind of given this free roaming role, I thought he was fairly good on the ball. I didn't really see him make mistakes with it. He was circulating the ball well and finding Modric and Kroos, and there was just some good passing connections inside the half space, and access to the final third wasn't a problem. It was once we were in there, the final pass wasn't always there. I thought Valencia, they were generally organized, but it was just, we came back with the high tempo. Modric and Kroos made sure that we were playing quick, short passes all over the place. I thought Ronaldo was inspired in the first half, driving at players, taking long shots, just really, really trying to lift Madrid up. And then he scores that magnificent header. So I think everything was going nicely in terms of what Madrid needed for a comeback, especially in that first half.
Yeah. And then the goal, in theory, was very timely. You ideally always want to pull one back before halftime and then swing momentum, which Real Madrid did. And then in the second half, they had momentum going for them. And then here's where I think a lot of the criticism comes in the second half, be it right or wrong. But this is basically the main complaint about the second half was not so much that Real Madrid didn't dominate, whatever. It's the decision to go to the flanks over and over again. And the substitutions also dictated that ideology, in a sense, you know, throwing Vasquez on for Modric. And the other thing I noted was that Lucas tweeted that Real Madrid had 49 crosses. And then I also had noted that often Modric was caught on the right wing playing that role where he's the one trying to create space to get a cross in from the right. And I don't think that's necessarily the best use of Modric either. I think, you know, there are a lot of ways you can use Modric. And I don't think that's necessarily the best way to use him. I'd be curious to know, what did you think of that, you know, that style of play? Do you think it's exaggerated? Do you think in this situation, Real Madrid, you know, it's conducive to their flow if they go to the flanks? You know, what did you think of that?
I'd say that I'm not against crossing just in general, especially if it's used right. And I think while we were crossing a lot throughout the whole game, there was this general period, I think like to 60, 70 minutes, where I think it was all right, because there's only so much you can do when a team bunkers down and parks the bus. And it's not like we were just going straight to the flanks to cross every single time. And I'm specifically talking about before Lucas came on for Modric. Because essentially what we were doing was first trying to kind of get beyond that midfield line, caused Valencia to constrict their defense a bit, and then we played the ball out wide. So we're getting open to semi-open looks when the fullbacks were trying to cross. And I think that's generally okay, because when you're crossing, when the opposition is in transition, it gives you a better chance. I just thought Valencia's center backs just dealt with it really well. But I was generally okay with that, which there could have been more we'd done. Maybe I think James kind of was a passenger in this game. I didn't see enough of the types of vertical passes and through balls I would have wanted him to play to unlock this defense. But it was generally okay. And then when Lucas comes on for Modric, we go into this 4-2-4 formation, and then it's just the ball only goes to the flank, and it's just predictable cross after predictable cross. And that's where I think the criticism is really justified, because it's so easy to defend that type of stuff. And really, once that happened, I kind of knew we were going to lose the game, because it just looked so easy for Valencia after that. I think that was a big mistake by Zidane. I think we had a good balance going. I think if you wanted to bring a midfielder off, I'd say put on Kovacic or Isco, or even put on Morata, who I think just because, you know, it gives you energy up front. But I think it was a really, really bad decision to bring Lucas on for Modric.
So that answer sets us up well for a little bit later in the podcast, because there's actually questions on this specific topic. So I think we'll revisit it.
Okay.
Do you want to talk at all about some of the non-calls in this game, do you think?
Yeah, the referee really did not convince me. Spanish officiating is just so bad. La Liga doesn't look like they're ever going to do something about it, so I guess we just have to live with it, but it was terrible. There's a clear penalty on Ronaldo in the box. I don't understand how it gets clearer than that. You know, there was another time where he beat his marker, and the guy just put his arm across. On Valencia's end, Ramos stepped on Munier, and that should have been a clear free kick, because I think it was just right outside the box. This ref just wasn't seeing things, and I don't think these were difficult calls, because these were things mostly, maybe the Munier one, but I think because for me, I'm biased, so I just automatically thought Munier was going down easily, but he let a lot of easy calls go. And I think a Ronaldo penalty, even, you know, considering how good Diego Alves is when saving pens, I think that could have changed the game, because the way Ronaldo was playing, I think he would have buried that pen, and, you know, we would have got at least a draw, or we could have pushed on and won the game. So yeah, the ref definitely had an influence.
I mean, the officiating in La Liga is just disastrous every week, every game. It's not, you know, necessarily unique or favorable to any specific team. But I think the Munir one was the most shocking to me. Looking live, it was I thought for sure Munir's. There's no way Munir actually got fouled, because the referee is right there. He's looking at it. And if you look at his reaction to when he didn't call it, it was like he just looked at it for a bit and then just put his arms out. And I think in his head, he was like, I probably missed a big call here. And then he's just like, well, shit, well, the game has got to go on. It kind of didn't seem, his body language, it almost like, it just screamed that he knew he had made a mistake. That's what it felt like. But I mean, none of us like talking about these things, but they're real enough that we have to touch on them because it's a disaster. Should Zaza have been sent off, or you think fair game? I guess the only reason he would get a second yellow was because he threw Carvajal in the first half.
That thing. That was cynical. I mean, it wasn't all that physical or violent, but if you're really going by the rule book, that was unnecessary, and I would have sent him off because I think that was fairly unprovoked. I mean, they were tussling a little bit, but he just kind of threw Carvajal aside. But I think that was the one decision where I guess maybe I'd be leaning on the ref, because there's few refs that will look at something that kind of iffy and just straight off send someone off.
We are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and take your questions from Facebook and Twitter. This is the Managing Madrid podcast. I'm your host, Kian Sabani. I'm joined by Omar Vin, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Managing Madrid podcast. I am your host, Kian Sabani. I'm joined by our very own tactical guru, Om Arvind. We are trying our best to break down the loss at the Mestalla. We went through the goals conceded, the goals scored, and kind of how it unfolded. But we also have a lot of questions from you guys, and we want to get through them. So the first question is from one of our patrons. There are actually three patron questions tonight. So the first one is from Thomas Berg. He asks us, dissect the first 10 minutes. How come we started so bad? Was Navas out of position on the first? And why gamble, as Varane did, to lose the ball on the second? Individual mistakes are wrong tactic. Wouldn't it be better to start controlling the first 25 and then start the engine full speed instead of open up for counterattacks? So, we discussed this at length already. I think maybe the only part we didn't discuss is this down to individual mistakes or wrong tactics? And I think specifically he's asking about the goals conceded.
So I'd say the first one is down to a tactical mistake. I mean, I guess it could be individuals not performing Zidane's plan as Zidane wanted it. So that way, I guess it could be an individual mistake, but tactically things were poor. We can be sure of that. And the second goal was just, it was individual mistakes from Varane, Kroos, and I didn't notice Casemiro jogging back, but you did. So for the three of those players who I don't think did their part, and Navas. Yeah, so the second goal was really on just individuals and wasn't really tactical, but the first one was definitely tactical.
The first one also, I wonder if I could play devil's advocate to it, is Zidane has this idea he wants to implement. And it's up to his players to implement it. And I know this already sounds like I'm defending Zidane. I'm not saying what I'm saying. what I just noticed in the first goal, and I did bring this up, is that Kroos is pressing, and he probably thinks behind him the team is cohesively pressing with him. I'm not sure if he is aware at that moment that Marcelo can't press up and cover the winger. Because, you know, Marcelo can't, for whatever reason, he can't leave his man and Varane's not in sync. So it all kind of, it's like a domino. And I wonder in that moment, can we say the players need to make a better judgment call and communicate better, because Zidane is not going to be able to, you know, this is not FIFA where you can press L1 and switch player.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a fair point. But when I just say like it's a tactical mistake, I'm just saying like structurally it wasn't okay, whether it was the players or whether it was Zidane, just as a whole, the way we approached that whole play was wrong. I think it's really difficult to discern who was at fault for this, especially because we've had success with pressing in the past. But there's no doubt that Don's going to look at this and sit down and I think talk to some players about the mistakes they made on this play.
So next question from also a patron, Anton Hackberg. He asks, I literally feel exhausted after watching games like these, both mentally and physically. Is this something you guys feel too? He's basically asking that is, what's it like being a soccer fan? Which I think we all know, it's an emotional roller coaster. Do you want to add anything to this? Do you want to share your deep emotions?
I mean, for some reason I felt very calm watching this game. I wasn't happy, but I was calm. And I think it's because I kind of like, I predicted the 2-2. So it's like things are playing out as I kind of thought it would be, with Valencia kind of having this really intense start encountering. But I got frustrated when the ref made decisions. Like I kind of lost it there. And at the end, I was pretty frustrated. But for the majority of the match, I was calm because it was going according to kind of how I thought it would play out. So
yeah, exactly how I predicted it as well.
5-0, Keon, you jinxed it.
This is me in a nutshell about like how how reactionary I can be, because like the day before, and I had told this to Andrew Gaffney, who I did a Q&A with, he's Valencia based journalist. I told him it just seems like Valencia will probably figure it out just in time before they play Real Madrid. Zaza and Oriana are fitting in. All of a sudden, they're clicking. And Mestalla is a tough place to play. And Real Madrid, it's going to be really tough for them. And then, like, just before, like, we're asking for predictions, I just get this second mini wind. And I'm like, you know what? 5-0, guns blazing, let's do it. And that's just, you know, I kind of ride the emotion. But then obviously none of that happened. So there's another question from a patron, Nick DeStefane. And this question actually, just to be clear, it came in yesterday, but I told him we'd answer it. He asks two questions for the pod. Which Champions League scares you the most? I think he means which Champions League team. So which Champions League team scares you the most and who leaves this summer?
Well, I'll answer the first one, and I'll say it's PSG, or Bayern Munich, like either one. I can't pick, mainly because I saw what PSG did to Barcelona, and I think I'm mainly saying this not just off this one performance, but because it seems like PSG are really making a statement of intent. They're tired of getting knocked out in the quarterfinals every single time. They want all this money to pay off, and you know the only way they can really make it pay off is by going far and trying to win the Champions League and making the finals. So I think there's just that extra motivation for players in that match. And I'm always scared of Di Maria in the big games because he's just a world-class player. And Bayern, because it's Ancelotti's team, and Ancelotti has mastered the Champions League. So those would be the two teams
Juve?
That I'm scared of. Juve?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm scared, but I'm wary. I always respect Juve as a team, because they have really strong players. Defensively, they're very solid. Dybala is, you know, he's going up the rungs of quality really fast. But I wouldn't say I'm as scared of them as I am with PSG and Bayern.
How about Arsenal?
Oh, God, Keon. I remember you predicted that they would beat Bayern. Keon. You in predictions, man.
You get one out of 100 right. And then that one, you wave in everybody's face.
Keon,
I'm a prophet.
I'm always right, Keon. I'm always right.
Just wait. Let's wait to see how badly Arsenal dismantled Bayern in the second leg.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
4-0 does it, right? 4-0. In all seriousness, I think I would prefer playing against Bayern over Juve and PSG. Not because Bayern is not an amazing team, but because I think we might match up better against Bayern's style. I would have some confidence in playing a bit of a counter-attacking scheme against someone like Bayern. Whereas with PSG, I think they just would wreak all kinds of havoc and cause all kinds of problems. There's a second part of this question. Do you want to answer it? So who leaves this summer? Do you want to... We don't have to... We can spend maybe like 10 seconds on this. Any thoughts on this?
I really have no idea. It's going to be James or Isco, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's pretty reasonable. And maybe Pepe, depending on how things unfold with his situation. So let's go back to some questions on Facebook. Oh, nice transition. Mohamed Yahya asked, James over Isco, why? And those bundles of crosses when you have Kroos and Modric playing in the midfield, why can't we create to the middle? So the idea of James over Isco, by the way, to start this game, I have no problems with. I might take issue with the fact that Isco wasn't introduced after we saw how the game was being played out and how difficult and laborious it was creating chances down the middle. But I don't have any problems with James starting over Isco. You made the point that earlier in the podcast, I don't remember the word you used now, but James was...
a passenger.
A passenger, yeah. I mean, basically, James in this game was... His role was to be an outlet on the right flank and then cut in and find a pass or swing it in. And that was basically like his role. It was not a very mobile role. It wasn't like, for example, against Osasuna where his heat map was kind of all over the place. He was defending the left flank. He was going down the middle. Basically, in this scheme, he was basically an outlet on the right wing and no more. I think if, you know, like how this goes back to like last year, we say this. People ask us, how do we beat Atleti? Like, how do we break down a defensive scheme? Isco and Marcelo were those guys that do it for you. So I think what I have a problem with them is not the starting lineup and who started, but the lack of reaction, or maybe the lack of a correct reaction to how the game was unfolding. Because I don't know if this was a game for Lucas. As much as I love him and the work he does on the flank, there are different scenarios for Lucas. I don't think this was one of them. I think this was more of a game for Isco and or Morata, the way it was unfolding.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I have no issue with James starting over Isco because James is better on the right wing. And we all saw how bad Isco was on the right under Benitez. I agree that if you can take issue with Isco not being brought on because, you know, we were crossing a lot. But like I said before, I thought it was okay because we were first going through the middle before going out wide. But I struggled to see how Zidane looks at that situation and thinks what we really need is more crosses. And, you know, we should just avoid going through the middle entirely and bring on Lucas for Modric. I think either Kovacic or Isco comes on for one of that midfield three and to give you something more through the middle. So you have better access to the center, and then you can go wide and cross because the team will be in transition. But it just kind of gives you that extra penetration we needed, especially since we weren't creating a lot of chances inside the box. I think people can take issue with Isco not coming on and Lucas coming on for Modric and not even James, which was a highly questionable decision. But yeah, it's a tactical mistake by Zidane.
And guess what? All of the James versus Isco questions are back. After a hiatus, They resurfaced.
Oh, God.
And we're just going to skip over those. There's a question from at Boo5Alid on Twitter. He asks, do you think we are using Kroos well? Where is his penetration and forward passing? A player like him should try to shoot.
I thought it was okay. I thought Kroos's was okay today.
Mm.
Like I said before, he was making a concerted effort, especially in the first half, to play those cute little vertical passes into the half spaces. I thought he was connecting with Modric and Ronaldo, who were kind of running into those areas quite well. It was just a case of... It was just a case of the final pass not being there and all the players kind of being hamstrung by Zidane's strategy at the end. And I think throughout it was a crossing-oriented strategy, which kind of means that once you play the ball in the center, you're just immediately looking to go out wide. But I think Valencia has to be given some credit for just not being this kind of gaping hole that would have allowed the likes of Kroos, Modric, and James to just play through ball after through ball.
So I think, to me, by the way, I thought Kroos was Real Madrid's best player. obviously, also before I saw your video of him jogging back, but that doesn't necessarily change what I thought he did for the team. And especially in the first half, like you noted it, he was the one guy who was playing vertical. By the way, by the time this was all said and done, the game was over, he had 41 vertical passes. He had 3 chances created. The eye test was just as good. And he was also very fluid off the ball. So if he wasn't the one making the vertical passes, he was getting in behind space, in behind Valencia's midfield and providing an outlet, which was kind of a, you know, he played higher up the pitch than, you know, I wouldn't say normally, but he played, you know, pretty high up the pitch today. In certain situations. And then, you know what, I think what maybe kind of irked me a bit is the fact that I don't think Valencia were like otherworldly good defensively. I think they did a lot to disrupt Real Madrid by being very physical, you know, by just being annoying and getting people's heads, you know, the way Valencia can do. But I don't think their defense was actually that compact. And if you go back and look at the tape, there's a lot of, you know, channels open in behind their defense. And if there's more movement down those central channels, you can probably get in there. And I think the only time I actually noticed us trying to go there is when Kroos was moving there or trying to get the ball there in the first half.
Yeah, I guess I can agree with that. Where I would assert that people give credit to Valencia is when they were defending crosses, because I thought the marking was extremely good. And trust me, it isn't easy to mark Ronaldo and Benzema when they're running around and causing havoc in the box. I thought the marking there was really good. I didn't think the midfield block was all that solid. Like you said, the compactness wasn't great, especially vertically, because James, Kroos, Modric, you know, they kept dipping into the half space and they kept receiving passes. That could have been blocked with better structure. But I think at the end of the day, Valencia's defense was good enough where it mattered, which was inside the box.
My goodness, there's a lot of questions. So I'm just going to try to speed this up a bit. Tony Escobar asks, whenever probable transfer rumors come out about Real Madrid players, could that take a toll on the team's psyche? So quickly, I mean, I don't know. If I don't know if this is really actually a question we want to answer right now, especially it seems. But I mean, yeah, I mean, we'd never know what goes on in players' heads. And surely, like on a very human level, these footballers are all humans and they experience different emotions. And I'm sure they don't want to keep moving their families and whatever. So I think it does affect them. Do you want to add anything to this?
No, I have nothing to add.
Okay. There's a couple questions about just the grand scheme of things. So one from Vessar Reen, one from John Charles, and there's also another question from John Charles. So the question is basically, should Madridistas be worried now? Will it be the same story dropping points and Barca edging Madrid to winning La Liga?
Should we be worried? I mean, I'm worried, but I don't know if that means we should be worried. I think, and not trying to devalue anything Zidane's done, but I just feel like things have gone our way more this season, despite like all the injuries we've had. I just kind of felt that a lot of times we've won matches that we wouldn't have in the past, and even when we haven't necessarily played the best football, we've still won. So it just kind of seems like there's a good belief in this team and that things have just generally gone our way. But on the other hand, this is looking a lot like the 14-15 season, where Valencia destroyed our title hopes by taking 4 points off us away and at home. And, you know, here we lose again 2-1. So I can understand the concern. You know, one La Liga title in 8 years is not a great record. So, but we still are at the top of the table. And unless we move below, unless we move to second or third, I think you've just got to give Madrid the benefit of the doubt. Because if there's one thing I believe Zidane can do, it's that he can motivate and re-energize the team. So a mental collapse, I'm not really that worried about that at the moment. But Villarreal, very tough opponent. Celta Vigo, very tough opponent. If we don't get through that with 3 points in both matches, I think then it becomes a lot more likely that we lose the La Liga title.
The problem is also that regardless of how good Real Madrid seem to be, the amount of good teams in La Liga are staggering right now. So Real Madrid, they just had their second loss in the league today. That points them 1 point ahead with a game in hand. They now have as many losses as Barcelona, which is two. And so just think about that. I mean, Real Madrid have had almost a flawless season. Four draws and two losses. And all of a sudden, they have as many losses as Barcelona, who we always say are slumping and they haven't been themselves. They're struggling. Their midfield is collapsing. But they just get results. And I mean, that's all that matters at the end of the day. It's not the eye test. It's not that they were shit against Leganés. It's that they won. Yeah. So they're not going away, regardless of how good Real Madrid is. Sevilla and Atletico and Villarreal all have four losses only. So, you know, that's the problem right now, is that La Liga is also very, very good, regardless of how good you are. And it's just not giving you a moment to catch your breath.
So the lesson is nothing is guaranteed.
Yeah, nothing is guaranteed. Every game is going to be a grind. There's a question from Fab Famizi asking, why was Pepe not on the bench? And as far as I understand, there's actually no good reason other than the fact that Zidane just wanted to omit him because there's only so many slots available on the roster and Pepe was probably going to play against Napoli.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis.
I don't know. I can't necessarily confirm this off right now, but Miran messaged me just a second ago and he said Varane is up for 3 weeks. I know that Zidane after the game mentioned that a reporter had asked him why did Varane get subbed off. I think kind of wanting to hint at that it's because Varane was poor. And then Zidane answered and say actually it was just a precaution or he wasn't fit. He's not feeling well physically, so we had no choice but to take him off, which kind of surprised me.
Well, despite how badly he played, that sucks. Because I thought he had a really shaky start to the season, but kind of in the middle, he just really regained his form. And I think he's been our best defender since up till this match. So I think that's a big blow. I'm interested to see who Zidane picks to play versus Napoli. Because Pepe hasn't had a lot of game time ever since Ferran picked up his form. And Nacho has played very well this season. But I don't know if he's a better choice than Pepe, who I just think is better at everything than Nacho, you know, bar versatility.
It is pretty obvious to me, isn't it? I mean, Pepe will be Pepe and Ramos. It kind of picks itself for Napoli.
Yeah, I guess.
I will say that you know, and this kind of just occurred to me now when we were talking about the question about which team scares you the most, I'm actually not entirely convinced we advance against Napoli.
Yeah, we definitely can't take it for granted because Napoli are a different side at home. They're very, very strong at home, and they will come out with the intent to score lots of goals. I mean, that's how they play anyway. But if we have this sort of bullshit defending that we saw today, we're not going to go through. The defense has to be sharper. Our press has to be spot on. And, you know, I likely think that we need to get a goal away to Napoli to really seal our progression into the quarterfinals.
I think the one comforting factor, Om, is that I just did a quick check. There hasn't been a single game this season where Real Madrid have not scored a goal.
That is comforting.
That is comforting. So, I mean, we know the difference one away goal makes. We know that Napoli has one, but, I mean, the difference between having to score, win 2-0 and then 3-1 is huge.
Yeah.
So we have that going for us. Last question, and then we'll wrap it up. From Emmanuel Manga on Twitter says, do you think we need a top center back because I'm really starting to lose faith in Varane? Too inconsistent, and that could cost titles.
I disagree. What center back are you going to go for? Like Otamendi, who's the definition of inconsistent this season.
John Stones?
Yeah, who's even more inconsistent and horribly mistake prone. I mean, sure, I agree that in some ways Varane hasn't lived up to his potential yet and that he hasn't been nearly as consistent as we would have liked him to be, partly because of injuries, partly due to his own mistakes like what we saw today. But when you actually take a step back and try to find other quality defenders elsewhere, there's really no one available. I don't know how that speaks about modern football as a whole, but there just aren't that many great center backs. When you have someone like Varane, I would do anything to keep him, especially Ramos. For all the times I complain about Ramos's, you know, the mistakes he makes, he's still invaluable because there's no other defender on the market that matches their quality and are ones that are available for us to buy. I think we're set in the central defense department because Vallejo is maturing really well. And I would prefer he gets another season in Germany. And then after that, we bring him back. And I think he'll be good enough to really compete with Varane. So, yeah, I'm really not worried about our defense at all. And I definitely wouldn't go looking in the market for another center back because there is no one.
All of that rings true. I mean, and also, I think there is also, sometimes we look at defenders from other teams and maybe think that they're better than they really are, in the sense that any team in the world would love to have Varane.
Yeah.
And there are, you know, even like the elite world-class defenders, they will go through patches where they just get carved defensively, whether it's down to individual error, the strength of a certain attacking teams or lack of cohesiveness in a defensive scheme. Defenders have these games and they will have them, you know, throughout the season. And I think Varane's actually been pretty good as of late, you know, barring this game, which a lot of it came down to just maybe individual error, unfortunately for him. But look, like you said, I really don't want to see any new center back come in before Vallejo comes back. And, oh my God, Otamendi. It's a terrifying idea. I mean, Otamendi is not a bad... He was not a bad defender. I mean, with Valencia, he was probably better than he is now. But, I mean, there's no... This is such a reactionary idea.
Yeah.
Any concluding thoughts on? Any message to your fans?
Well, I would say that don't give up. Don't be pessimistic. Don't lose hope. But I'm a really pessimistic guy, so I'm not sure I can just find it within me to be that disingenuous to who I am. So I'll let you give people the pep talk.
I predict 6-0 victory over Napoli.
Oh, you're going to fucking jinx it again.
With extra Q&A sauce on top. Q&A before and after. Okay, we're going to wrap it up. This was fun. Probably more fun than I anticipated it being, given that we had just lost a game. It's not always doom and gloom. Real Madrid is still first. They have a game in hand. And just a reminder, in case you guys enjoyed this podcast, we ask two things. Please rate us on iTunes, because that helps our podcast be more visible. And, you know, it's nice because I know a lot of people look for a Real Madrid podcast, and, you know, we'd like to be the forefront in this. So if you enjoy it, please give us a rating and share the podcast far and wide. And also, one step farther, if you really love us, then you might want to support us on Patreon. We have a Patreon page set up where you can actually pledge donations anywhere from starting from $1 a month to more. It's up to you, totally. Anything you give helps us pay our producer, Eric, and grow the pod. So thank you so much for listening, guys. Kian Sobhani here, and alongside Om Arvind.
Give me the framework of a game every week in, week out, on what the bare bones of the game is coming about. And I want to thank you and all the lads at Managing Madrid for what you do, your dedication, your professionalism, your insight, your knowledge, all of those things, and least of all, your passion.
This is the Managing Madrid podcast.
Munir in for Zaza, settles, turns, shoots and buries it! Coast to coast from Diego Alves with the risky pass in the back. They find Munir and Zaza finds the net. What a way to start out for Los Che.
And you said it, Phil, you said these players such as Zaza, they've come in, there's a, what do you call it, a reclamation project? Well, what a way to reclaim some pride for Valencia. That is a fabulous strike. That's one of the goals of the season, surely.
Real Madrid scrambling back. Zaza threads it across. Here's Nani one-on-one with Carvajal. Back the other way, stepping up, Orellana rolls it through Navas, and it's two. We're barely 8 minutes in. Valencia shredding the Real Madrid defense.
Brilliant counter-attack, absolutely stunning. They got numbers for Valencia. They were able to find the gaps there. Ramos and company got a big job here. 2-0 down. Valencia in the ascendancy. Money delighted with that. And you said it fully, so there's a lot of talent up front. Can they gel? The answer after 8 minutes, yes, they can.
So dangerous on the set plays. Run of play, maybe not as much here. Another chance. Snap to the corner! Cristiano Ronaldo soars and scores. And just before the half, Real Madrid cuts the lead in half. 43 straight games with a goal.
Yeah, we said they would score. They have to score. But CR7 getting up, absolutely brilliant. Good ball into him. Back on. Back in this match, Real Madrid. Have a look. Marcelo head up, looks for his man, always looking for Ronaldo, because he knows one thing. Ronaldo can climb, he can get up, he can hang in the air, and he can finish. Absolutely brilliant. And what a good time to score. 1 minute before halftime, you go in that locker room, and suddenly it's a whole different atmosphere amongst the players.